Hello, I am Thomas Wood, also known as the Pyro Juggler.
And I'm Sarah Walker, better known as Dreamy.
We are surfing the stream of consciousness. This could go anywhere.
Anywhere.
We are not committing to anything, including editing. Editing ourselves, editing you.
Editing our topic.
So sit back and enjoy. This is a lot like having an actual conversation with us.
I hope you like it.
So, here we are in a hotel room in San Diego.
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting 24 hours.
Yeah, I'm
so tired.
I ended up going through minor surgery this morning, which started actually the day before. Oh, God. We stopped in to just get something looked at on my foot because I'd had an ingrown nail. And we're going in expecting to only be there for maybe a couple of hours. And as we're signing up for everything, it's like, well, the wait's not so bad. It's only 6 or 7 hours. And I thought they were kidding. Turns out they weren't kidding.
Yes, they use that whole emergency term pretty loosely. I think I've come to understand something about urgent care being different from emergency care. Apparently, emergency is not an urgent enough word for need care now.
Weird. Anyway, so pulled an all-nighter and ended up kind of literally limping home. And when finally got home, just felt like just dropping into bed. But no! We had to come down to San Diego, and that's where we rolled in. And as we're rolling down the street, this whole flood of memories goes through my head, because I don't spend a whole lot of time in this town anymore. I used to. Actually, I used to live in this town. I used to live in La Mesa.
Weird feeling in this town. Seems like there are a lot of cops just scrutinizing you at every turn.
Everywhere. It's like perpetual cop presence. At least it has been tonight. Maybe it's just been so for me. The paranoia goes wild.
I don't know. Maybe they're just paranoid for these Tiki Oasis people. I mean, them and their fly Hawaiian shirts and their martini drinks and
what the heck?
God knows what else. I don't know.
I don't understand you kids and your Tiki Oasis. But anyway, regardless, so we're rolling down the freeway out here, and we had a flat tire on the way here, so just to add to it, so I'm limping around on, like I've got the cane out, and the tire's flat, and it just blew up rather dramatically.
I was driving. I am not comfortable with driving a stick yet. Holy crap. But I guess the best way to learn the finer aspects of stick work is LA traffic. And I had to do that, and it was terrifying. And then it was all hunky-dory. We were going up to speed. I didn't have to shift anymore. And then the tire blew out rather spectacularly, and pieces flew everywhere. And just all of a sudden, I don't know if we hit anything, the tire just decided it didn't want to be a tire anymore. And ripped to shreds and tore up part of our truck. And
I quit being a tire. Splap!
Yes. Yeah, but, as is pretty much every road trip we have ever been on.
Holy crap, it's been...
This is nothing.
That's a completely different story. We can...
No,
actually,
that's a different podcast.
That is a scheduled podcast right there.
Yeah, I want to have an epic...
road horror stories.
Yeah, road horror stories episode. Like, tell us your horror story, because I'm sure there are some pretty monumental stories out there.
At some point, I've got to tell of the worst date.
No.
Worst first date ever.
No, I have to
record it. Sometime.
Are you sure the general public is ready?
No, I'm not giving this to the general public.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, that's not really... I wouldn't say it's not appropriate. I mean, A, they won't believe you. B, they will just lose faith in humanity and be scared shitless to ever date again. But that's a different story.
And I ended that particular story. I usually end that story almost like a campfire type of thing. And somewhere out there, she waits like a gorgeous landmine.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, you're going to have to wait for to be in person for that one. And you have to know him for a while, so yeah.
Holy crap.
That story doesn't get... Anyway. we've had people rocking back and forth listening to that story.
We had actually, that's the usual response.
I swear to God, that needs to be made into a horror movie of some sort.
Which means we've got to record it at some point.
Horror movie / porno. We know the people.
Horno.
Horno.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Oh. It's like that zombie movie Pine Tree gave us.
Oh, God. And now we're going to have to make it happen. All right.
Anyway. So what were we talking about?
San Diego. San Diego.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty pretty interesting. So the tire blows up, and then we pull over to the side. Well, I somehow didn't freak the fuck out being new to driving a stick in a giant truck. This is a huge truck. You have no idea. It's a big old fucking dually. And oh my God. Anyway.
I wonder if we'll end up bleeping parts of this or not. Or
I don't know. I'm going to have to look up the standards. I think we should just ask the readers. Do they want this shit bleeped? Because I've got a pretty dirty mouth. I don't know. My
girl cusses like a sailor. She really does.
They haven't even heard my origin story yet. Which is what we were trying to get to. Excuse me.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, this is just us bullshitting in a hotel room, kind of recapping the day. Both of us have been awake for a couple of days, and
yes.
I was just setting the scene. So I guess this is a good time to start the conversation. You will get more recordings of me when I'm more up, but
so to speak.
Yeah.
Whoa, that'll be in the porno. Anyway, so what was it? Oh, right.
Origin stories.
Origin story. Oh, well, another thing that happened with the blown tire, which was pretty interesting, is we were sitting there. Thomas had his cane on the side of the road. We were struggling with our tools. Usually we have a big contingent of tools, but
couldn't quite find the
perfect tool for the job, and struggling with the hubcap to get the hubcaps off and et cetera. And then, Thomas looked at me and said,
yeah, if we're in Texas, there'd be people helping us by now. I mean, because it's true. Different areas of the country are really, really different as far as their willingness to help. California, for some reason, they almost think it's rude to talk to anyone that they don't know, even if it's to help them.
Right.
Which is weird, because you'll approach people to help them.
Like, no, I don't have any money.
Yeah.
What? I just wanted
to pull your leg out of that bear trap.
I don't have any money.
Yeah, it's so a conditioned response.
Yeah, no sooner had we commented that, you know, if we were in Texas, we'd definitely have somebody pulled over.
We've lived in Texas before. Yeah. And
that's not just Texas either.
I've had people that I don't know pull over to the side of the road and spend the next 14 hours getting greasy and bloody under my truck because they were just good Samaritans that didn't know me. Yet. And in California, it's not that way. So I kind of wonder why that cultural bias exists. I can spout out theories, but I think you, the listener, should let us know.
There's a culture of people kind of be isolated from each other. You know, they go home, they're at home in the morning, they don't have contact with anybody. They go into their garage, get into their car, they don't see anybody again. They go in their cars by themselves in their little box of isolation, and God help you if you make eye contact with somebody at that point.
By the way, California is, for the same set of reasons, really challenging to perform in.
Oh my God, it's one of the hardest audiences ever. Don't get me wrong, there's nice
people.
It's not
that we don't love Californian audiences. I mean,
yeah, it's just, they're difficult.
But as far as like, yeah, but if you take them versus the rest of the nation as far as trying to crack them, they're so used to all their entertainment being a flickering screen in their living room that if you do something that's right there and real, they kind of freak out.
They don't know how to handle it, and their only defense is to try and ignore you entirely. It's really challenging.
It's true. And it's not that they're not, on some level, willing to play with you. They are. They just don't know how to do it. And they seem somehow shocked when their entertainment starts interacting with them.
Yeah, it's amazing. You'll be at a fair trying to perform for patrons, and there'll be only two patrons in the street, and you'll be talking directly to them, and yet they will ignore you. Like you're not there.
Yeah, I've actually walked out into the streets before, like as a stream of people was going past my show, and stood there as if I was basketball blocking to see if the people trying to ignore me would be so engrossed in their active effort to ignore me that they wouldn't see me standing right there in front of them in their direct path.
It can get pretty funny.
Yeah.
Like when you send out gangs of minions.
Yeah, and I'd stay there at like 10 feet in front of these people, stop, and just not move. And they'd run right into me because they're trying so hard not to make eye contact. Now, well, in California,
they think if they wish hard enough, you won't exist.
Yeah, and in California,
there is no Thomas.
In California, they're so conditioned with like panhandlers and such that basically, if anyone approaches you on the streets, they usually want something from you. Whereas other parts of the country, they'll do something like say hello.
Right.
Because they're being neighborly. California, they don't do that for some reason.
Keep in mind that
I'm not saying this is anything
against... It's a gross generalization.
Yeah, yeah, and...
But by and large, this is the tendency.
And honestly, I've lived here most of my life, and it's not like I don't enjoy parts of it, but this is one of those things that I thought was normal while I lived here, and then when I went everywhere else in the country, it is completely different. Anyway, California, I've sent out groups of my minions. By the way, minions are a group of people that follow me around the country and do my bidding at some of my shows. They're awesome. At
random locations. That's a different podcast.
That's a different thing entirely. But anyway, so my minions go out there and try to gather audience for me. And in California, one of the things I've done as a game to see if it would work, because the second that you start to look like you're going to say something, they look directly in the opposite direction. So what I've done is I've gained minioned patrons before, where I'll get like 5 or 6 minions and surround someone and have one of them start talking so that they'll face towards the other one. And eventually they're forced to actually confront us. But the great thing about that is that they suddenly realize,
hey, wait a minute, I've been an asshole this whole time.
Yeah, crazy.
It's great to knock people out of their shells like that. It's awesome. Just, and then dude, why are you ignoring us right now? We are here to entertain you right now. That is our primary directive right now.
Why? I suppose it's kind of a passive-aggressive line that I've used during my hawking, but it's actually gotten some laughs and gotten, you know, people to actually break down and go to my show before. And this originated not in California, but in, like, the Midwest before. Just some grumpy person that had come through the door. Just was bound and determined to have a bad time no matter what I said or what I did.
Yeah, apparently she'd been a pill the whole car ride there. Like, I know what
And I looked at her and I started to say something, excuse me, miss. And just, no, I don't want any. Blah, blah, blah. And I looked at it for a second, examined it, noticed that she'd just come through the front gate and had a bunch of friends that didn't seem so pleased with her. And
yeah, her friends already were pissed off at her.
You know, as much as I wanted to have a good time with her, I couldn't not say it. It just, I had no editor. And it came out as, oh yes, you paid your money to get through the door. God forbid someone should sucker you into having a good time. And her friends laughed hard enough that they actually came over and individually tipped me for calling her on it.
Hey, some people need to be called on it.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I mean, it helps with their entire experience. You know, if you say, hey, you know, why are you doing this behavior? It's hindering your good time. Maybe you should stop doing that.
Yeah. Anyway, back to...
What were we talking
about? We were talking about the guy that helped stop... I know. We do that.
See, this is why we needed a podcast, because we'll just keep going with this shit.
Welcome to our stream of consciousness.
We need a Venn diagram and a flow chart and shit.
Actually, I think we work better this way.
Right.
Because, you know, just
we start mapping stuff out, we'll think too hard.
Yeah, no kidding. Because the thing that makes it not flow in the first place is if we think about it too much. You and I are really good in front of a live audience.
Just relax.
Just relax.
Just relax and take it.
Yeah. Oh. It's almost there.
This will be less painful. Just relax.
Oh, God.
Okay, so anyway, the guy that stopped to help us.
Yeah, the guy that stepped to help us was really nice.
I don't think we even got to that part yet. So we were sitting at the side of the road, and we were commenting if it was Texas, we'd have 4 people stop by now. And
this guy stops a pickup in the middle of nowhere, comes rushing through the bushes. There's like brambles sticking to him. Later we find out he's a Marine, so it's like, yeah, he's a Marine.
Yeah.
They're used to that type of thing. And
it's in the way, kick it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of tumbleweeds, and instead of grabbing them with his hands and rushing it, he just starts walking through the tumbleweeds and using his body to just push them out of the way. So there's like a bunch of brambles and stuff stuck to his jeans and whatever.
You know, he's a man. He's got jeans on and cowboy boots. He can kick some bushes.
A giant cowboy buckle.
Oh, yeah.
And it stops and helps us just randomly. It was really friendly. And first thing I asked him was, hey, man, where are you from? And, of course, he was from Texas. You know, it's just, wow.
I was like, wow, why am I not surprised?
Yeah, this really is the stereotype right there. Meanwhile, there's hundreds, if not, no, there really were thousands, because we're right next to the highway. There's thousands of people passing
us. We're on I-5.
And not helping. The one that does help us is from where we've been living for the past few years. And one of the reasons that we live there actually is exactly that type of thing. Now, Texas, and sorry, Texans, it's not that I don't love the place. I do. I live there. That's where I choose. But it's not the land that makes it cool. It's
the people.
Yeah, people will actually say hello to you.
Well, you know, when the weather is trying to kill you, you know, you tend to suffer together.
Yeah, I know.
if life or death depends on you knowing your neighbor, it gets pretty friendly.
But that guy, like, stopped, doesn't know our name, jacked up our truck, got oily, got greasy, got under my truck.
Pretty much wouldn't let us help.
Wouldn't let us help.
By contrast, remember there was that guy on our first trip out to Texas who was a Californian who moved to Texas.
Right, and that guy was aggressive.
That guy was aggressive. He would. But that was also
kind of a scary experience.
That's a different story.
We can make that part of this story.
You want to make that part of this? We can make that. Okay, it's a contrast piece.
So we start. We're
on our way to Scarborough.
Another flat tire.
Yeah, different flat tire. This time I was on the trailer.
Right. So it's on the trailer, and the tire blows. We pull off the side of the road. And there's no one, and somehow
it's
this guy...
It's a big old dirt farm, that's it.
Yeah, and somehow this guy seems to...
Was that the exit before Odessa?
Yeah, and somehow this guy sort of teleports into the area. It's kind of like a reverse Batman effect.
And this guy was like Boomhauer on crack.
Now, when we say that, it's not that, you know, we're making a stereotype here.
It's just a proper description.
I'm going to do... Wait, this is a recording, so we can actually do that. So he's trying to help us, and it goes something like this. Hey, man, how are you doing? Just want to notice you over here. Just sit down. We've got some of these things on top of the roof. Over there on top of the roof, we've got tires. We're going to fix you up right there. Aggressively helping us. And this went on like this, like that style of mumbling.
And through the mumbling, he was telling a long story, or alluding to a long story about what we gathered is having gone to prison for shooting a guy. But they're on good terms now.
Oh, no, that's a different part of the story, because, like, what had happened was we ended up following him back to his place where he apparently had some tires.
He was saying something about having tires on his roof.
And he did, but they weren't the right size, so he and I went into town, and I'm sitting there riding shotgun with this guy. And
me and JR stayed with the trailer, kind of apprehensive, like, well, I think Thomas can take care of himself.
Yeah, no. Those of you that don't know me, I'm better at defending myself than the average guy. However, this is still kind of scary, because there's a stranger. I'm rolling alongside him, and we are on our way questing for a tire.
Leroy.
His name was Leroy.
He lived in Odessa.
So Leroy, who is like Boomhauer on a lot of meth.
a lot of meth in there.
And the nicest guy you could possibly imagine. And I got the feeling that what had happened was, it wasn't even the feeling, he actually flat out told me, is that he'd led a life that was
unsavory
enough that he was trying to make up for lost time before he left this rock. And so he was just aggressively helpful. like,
you will not
you
help.
You will take this help. And
you will not help me do it.
Right. And I'm riding shotgun with him, and we're going to a couple places looking for a tire, and he's telling me his stories. Yeah, I was in jail. It was self-defense, but I did shoot a guy. And When I did shoot that guy, got me in trouble, but I got the dirt on the local judge. They can really send me a prison. I mean, yeah, they sent me a prison for a while, but and at this point we pass the local judge. He's on the road and the guy waves. Leroy rolls down the window, shakes hands with the guy. And we roll away, and he's still talking to me. Yeah, I got in trouble a while back. I shot a guy. Waves to another guy. It's the guy he shot. We ran into the guy he shot.
But man, you know, we're on good terms now, you know.
Yeah, yeah, we're on good terms now.
No, don't forget the dude and man. You could tell.
Oh, yeah, he dude man.
Yeah, he mentioned he was from California, so it was like Boomhauer, but interspersed with dudes.
Oh, God.
And dude and man. In there.
Yeah, it was just Friday. So the whole time, like, I'm running into...
Nice guy, though.
Aggressively nice guy. But he also killed a guy. And I'm finding out
not
this,
he
like...
He didn't kill a guy. He was right there. You met him.
Oh, wait, that's right. That's
he
right.
Shot
he just shot him.
He just shot a guy.
Didn't kill him. Just shot him.
But they're on good terms now.
Apparently, you know, and he was saying they
well,
also,
the
like...
Well, now, baby.
Apparently, he'd also said that he'd been stabbed a couple times in this town as well. I mean, just randomly. It came up in conversation.
And this is not a big town.
And it's what the heck, man?
Anyway, what were we talking about?
Anyway, we're just tangent man. I am tangent man.
I keep getting images of Doc Brown with his chalkboard showing the disparaging timelines.
Oh, God. Yeah. We'll have to have Danny Lord.
Yeah,
that's another tangent. Danny Lord's is...
Too many tangents. Focus. Yeah.
Too many tangents.
Focus.
Welcome to my ADD.
Hey, that's what we should call this, the ADD cast.
Welcome to my ADD.
ADH, what were we talking about?
Anyway, so there we are.
So we changed. We got a tire change.
We got a tire change. The guy helped us at no small cost to his own body, time, or effort. His children are waiting there in a truck on the side of the road, and they end up leaving without him for a while, so he's just there on the side of the road with us. His wife's off into the distance, and he's there aggressively helping us with this truck, and really nice guy, but that got us here, and we're on our way into town, and I suppose, you know, if we
now we have to get some tires.
Yeah, if we edit this later, I guess this is kind of where we'll start the whole origin thing. But the,
Wow, this is a really roundabout way to get to an origin story.
No kidding. No kidding.
Wow, it's like all the X-Men movies before Wolverine.
But, so...
It was worth it.
So, we're heading into San Diego, and I'm looking down the street, and all these memories come flooding into my head. I lived in San Diego for years, but it was a long time ago. It was in my youth, and... The thing was that so much dark stuff happened while I was here that my brain has actually locked a lot of it out, and a good hunk of my time here is sort of set on a need-to-know-only type of thing with my brain. It's not normally there when I think of my past, and then if I need something, and I can still access it, but it was a dark enough time period that my brain sort of gets rid of it.
Yes, kitty. You can participate in the podcast, too.
That's our cat.
Kitty. Yeah?
Shush.
Yeah.
You're derailing me even further. Stop it. Okay. Stop it.
Is it ADD? What were we talking about?
Anyway, so I'm rolling into town, and I am looking at the road, and the road unlocks a bunch of memories. Even the scent of the area starts to unlock memories. And there are years of my life that aren't normally there, and it's weird how having that flood back into your brain can be both comforting and horrifying. See, back then, I wasn't a juggler yet. I actually didn't have any sort of... I didn't know what I wanted to become.
How old were you?
I was about 21, 22. I was living with this lady, Dina. I suppose is one of those ones where I can actually use a name, because she's... Unfortunately, dead and gone now. But Dina and I went out for years. I loved her dearly. It was like one of the first people I ever really fell in love with. And we went through some really hard times. Went through some good times, too. But that's I'll talk more about that on a different recording. But I'm looking around, and all this time with her has disappeared out of my brain, and suddenly it's there again, and I remember it in a clarity that I don't get unless I'm actually in this town, and so that guard that's on me, guarding that section of my mind, steps away, and you go past the velvet rope in your mind, and there you are in that section of your brain again. When I was down here, I didn't have a direction, and I hadn't become a juggler yet, and I...
You hadn't had a juggling show yet. You did know
how to juggle. Yeah, I knew how to juggle, but...
You learned to juggle when I was 1 year old.
But it was a struggle. It was a hard struggle, and I didn't become a juggler because I went, I want to become a juggler, and then became one. It was more that I sort of had it thrust onto me.
Not unwillingly, but...
Yeah, well, in this town years ago, I was hit by a drunk driver from behind while pushing a 71 Pinto, and dislocated both shoulders, snapped my spine in half backwards, broke my right big toe on the back of my skull.
He was pushing it with, like, both, like, what, one hand on the open door and one hand on the steering wheel, and then when...
Yeah, when it was hit behind,
it yanked the car out of your hands and...
And just devastated me. Messed me up pretty good, actually. And when the disability ran out and I had demonstrated that I had full dexterity, but I didn't have endurance. So I could do pretty much anything that I wanted to, but I could only do it for a couple of hours a week. I had to figure out a way to make a living. And I became a juggler. But meanwhile, before that, I tried every job you can possibly imagine while I was in this town. And... We ended up fleeing, and I say fleeing into this town, not inaccurately. Me and Dina were living in Huntington Beach, and we had a roommate that died on us. We were taking care of this wonderful old couple, and one day, randomly, one of them dies, and the family descends on the place like vultures, and kick us out, despite the wishes of the one remaining guy. And I end up homeless for a while, living out of a van. Dina has...
The time you guys were living off of pomegranates or whatever?
No, that was before this. I'll get to that at some other point. But Dina had a friend of hers that swooped in and made sure that she had a place to go and that she had a job and a place to live and such in San Diego. And that was awesome. That was needed. But the underlying thing here was also it got her away from me. The guy had designs on her. And he stuck her in a situation where every day she was with these people that just, they didn't like me. Because eventually I got my stuff together and came down to San Diego myself sometime after Dina was here. And moved in with them. And Dina was kind of pumped with anti-Thomas propaganda the entire time she'd be at work. Oh, he's leeching off you. Oh, you know, so on and so forth. The fact is, I didn't have a normal job, not for lack of trying. This is previous to me getting into the accident, previous to any of that happening. I was doing temp work here and there, you know, doing what I could to earn a buck wherever I could. But I was actively looking for work every frickin' day, and no one hired me permanent. It was also during a bit of a recession. So, you know, you do what you can, and you take the crappiest jobs I have ever had in my life.
What did that feel about the mid-80s?
No, it was early 90s.
Early 90s.
Like 90, 91. And to give you an idea, one of the jobs that I had was via court order. I had to watch two parking stalls to make sure that no one parked in them. Now, this seems like an easy job, and it is, but I had to look busy while watching two parking stalls for 8 hours a day.
What were the parking stalls for?
The parking stalls were for this liquor store. The hospital next to them had a bunch of people that would always park in this liquor store's parking lot, and it made it so that this liquor store never got any business, so a court order was finally issued that they had to hire someone to make sure that no one parked in that spot.
Except to go to the liquor store.
Except to go to the liquor store.
The opposite of the hospital.
And, yeah, truly. So all these different jobs, and the vast majority of the time I'm unemployed. and all of Dina's friends and coworkers would sit there and kind of badmouth me while they're at work, tell her, oh, he's leeching off you, whatever. And meanwhile, I'm kind of busting my butt the entire time, trying to help out. And we actually did the math at one point, and I figured out that I was still pulling in 1/3 of all of our income, even though she had a permanent full-time job, and I was just, you know, catch if catch can. But when I got hit from behind by that drunk driver and laid up, she bailed on me. You know, she ended up moving out, kind of leaving me when I needed her most. Something that she literally regretted for the rest of her life. I talked to her just before she died, and one thing she did was she hugged me really big, and, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Of course, I whispered into her, for what, baby? For what? You know, someone once said, don't sweat the small stuff. You know what? It's all the small stuff. And it is. It seemed so all-encompassing and huge at the time, and now it's just this one little glitch in my history. But importantly, one of the other things they did was I was so poor at the time that we didn't know where our next meal was coming from. Dina, because she was so controlling on us trying to support each other, wouldn't let me do something as simple as buy a set of juggling balls because that was frivolous, and we had so much other things that we had to do with our cash. And thus, it was just looked at as this pipe dream that I had, that I wanted to be a juggler and write a show and everything. But now Dina's gone. Now I don't have a home. Now I don't have my health. And I have to make a living. So with my... And I had to do it on a couple hours a week, which was really hard to do. And with my then-current offers, it came down between pit fighting, prostitution, or juggling. I became a juggler. Thankfully.
You would have made a great prostitute. And come on, you would have owned the pit. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah. But thank you, dear.
Hey, that ranch wanted you. They were going to take Thomas to the stud farm. Anyway.
So I put all my eggs in one basket with what little cash I have accumulated at the end of that accident after medical and everything else. It wasn't very much at all. But me and a friend of mine rent out a warehouse in Fullerton, California, and I calculate how much cash I've got versus what the bills are there and what I've got left. And I've got a few months before I have no resources. And I sit down, and I get down to business, and I start writing a show. At first, it was me and a 3-man team called Pyrophilia. And I learned a lot. I learned a whole lot. You know, a show should have a beginning, a middle, an end. Here's what the build looks like. Here's what the, you know, all this other stuff. But in the end, as much as I learned with Pyrophilia, I learned a lot more on my own. The guy that taught me fire eating was amazing. Michael Marina, he's still out there. I don't talk to him much anymore, but if you ever get a chance, go see his show, but expect it to be exactly the opposite of what mine is like. We all got together and we'd all try to write these shows, but it was a struggle because all three of us had distinctly different styles and were trying to meld it, and it was like trying to fit three different shaped pegs into a hole that was nothing like the hole that was a shape of any of us.
I remember that IQ test.
Yeah, and so every time I would come up with an idea, for one reason or another, neither Mike nor Temple would generally like the stuff that I brought to the table. So I started accumulating everything that didn't work with the guys.
Or that they thought wouldn't work.
And I started creating a show out of it. Now, that's only partially true. I mean, there's stuff that was there on our own, there was stuff that they helped me with and whatever, but a large part of it was the original show was composed of the stuff that the other guys thought wouldn't work, but then did. And that's actually where I started my show. So I rented out this warehouse, I put all my eggs in one basket, and
is
no
that
one else's
warehouse and nightclub now?
You know, I don't know.
I think it is.
It has been before. But the thing was that no one else's butt was on the line. if I tried being a juggler in this particular case. And that was a first, because every other time that I wanted to follow this dream, you know, I tried everything under the sun. I was a warehouse worker. I was a laborer. I worked for an insurance company. I worked for, Traveler's Aid and all sorts of other stuff. And I failed miserably.
Or at least you didn't have the heart for it.
I didn't have the heart for it. And one of them, I was just cutting photos for 8 hours a day, and that's all I would do, just a glorified paper cutter. And the entire time I'm sitting there cutting papers, you've got a lot of time to meditate, a lot of time to think, because that's all you've got going on. And one of the things I kept thinking is, what am I doing? How does this change anything? What does this get accomplished? And it lit a fire under me to go and do something else. I was uncomfortable enough that I needed to.
Didn't you write a poem or something?
I did write a poem, and I really wish I could find it. It was on one of the last days that I ever had a regular, quote-unquote, regular job. And I had worked at Rocket Gibraltar, I think, and doing insurance stuff, and basically desk work and grunt work. And everyone else during their lunch break would go down to the lunch area and eat their food or whatever, and I'd bring a couple of balls and sit there in the reflection of the large mirrored buildings that they have in L.A. and Orange County and figure out stuff with juggling. Meanwhile, there's people behind those same mirrored walls, which are just windows, watching me. Job didn't last long.
Riff-raff!
So I'm rolling home.
Nonconformist!
Yeah, I get on a bus home, and I find out that it's my last day at that job, and I take off my tie and I stick it down next to me. And the tie looks a lot like a noose. And I go home and I find out that we're also going to lose the house soon. So I put on some shorts and this is just before the warehouse. I put on some shorts and I grab a towel and I grab a bowl and a ball, and I went to the beach and I practiced. And I calculated out that more money was thrown at me into my bowl per hour of me having a good time hanging out on the beach, watching pretty girls in bikinis pass and enjoying myself. More money per hour was thrown at me than I had made behind a desk. Funny that. So I made a deal with myself that I would give this a shot, and not quit until I failed. That was over 20 years ago. And that's when I stuck the whole thing together with the warehouse and everything else. And out of that warehouse came the framework of my current show.
Pyro Juggler Origin, across from the Spaghetti Factory in Fullerton.
Yeah. Place also used to be a recording studio where they recorded a lot of old punk bands, like Agent Orange cut their first album in what later became my bedroom. And then it became this Mexican bar where there was a bunch of murders. there was like...
So much history.
Yeah, there was like 6 or 7 murders in what later became our living room.
Yeah, that area is all gentrified now. They took all these old warehouses and turned them into nightclubs.
Yeah, you'd never know.
Upscale bars and I don't know what.
My first night there, and I remember this can actually peg exactly when I was there. I think it was 93? Anyway, my first night there, I'm bedding down, and the last words I hear are, yeah, the place is condemned. You know, they plan on tearing it down. It's not earthquake safe. Just hope you're not here during the big one. And I woke up to the Northridge quake. And as soon as I woke up, I thought it was a freight train going next to the house because it's next to a freight train area. And, you know, it's not uncommon. Then I realized after a while that wasn't a freight train and the whole house was shaking. And so I get up out of the bed and I go over to one of the arches in the doors, and one of the motorcycles that was in the living room of that place had dumped over, and there was a bunch of gasoline all over the living room. And there was a candle that was on one of the bookshelves that was rocking back and forth, much like a basketball rings around a hoop before it dunks in. And the earth is shaking, and this candle is doing this, you know, circular movement. And the first that hopped through my head was, well, okay, I'm not going to be able to get out this way, or if I do, I might end up getting, you know, burned alive. But behind me, there's a perfectly good wall in a building that is supposed to be condemned anyways. I bet you I can hit through it. That was my first night there. Yeah, I don't know where to go with this other than that was where I started. You wanted to know where the... I get asked all the time, how'd you get your start? What did you do? That's what I did. I ran into a situation where I had nothing to lose, and I put it all on the line, and figured out that I had done everything but follow my dream, so why not give it a shot? And those of you listening, hey, maybe you should do that. I mean, if you're ever in a situation where no one's going to suffer if you lose, why not give it a shot?
What are you afraid of?
Worst you can do is have nothing, and I started with nothing, so it wasn't that big of a threat. I knew what it was like. And because I took that risk, I've been happy with the direction that I've gone, because I did juggling as an experiment. I wanted to see if I could still make a living being a juggler in this day and age. And I didn't expect to succeed, by the way. I totally didn't expect to succeed. And there it is. I guess I'll stop there.
How long is a podcast supposed to be?
I don't know.
Fuck the rules. I don't care. As long as we want. As long as the story is, that's how long the podcast is.
Yeah. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed, guys. That's our first foray.
Thank you for joining us on Surfing the Stream of Consciousness. If you enjoyed our podcast, please refer to the donation button on your right-hand side. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod of IncompeteTech.com.